This is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
And good morning. It is Tuesday, 6 after the hour. Thanks for dialing us in. And what a mess we have across southern Michigan and many areas this morning. I'm going to go through this. Cover some of this for you so that if you're waking up, I slept through it apparently. I got caught in some major downpours yesterday. It was intense to say the least, but apparently overnight I slept through good portions of more rain. We have flood warnings in effect for several counties in southern Michigan. We'll start with the Looking Glass River near Eagle affecting Clinton County. Looks like that is out of bank full into flood conditions for the next 24 hours. That is expected to crest at about 9 feet, 2 feet above flood stage. So that homes in that particular area, DeWitt, Eagle, could see a lot of rain there. A flood warning remains in effect until noon today for parts of Eaton, Jackson, Ingham, and Calhoun counties. Areas affected by that would be Northern Jackson, Eaton Rapids, Leslie, Stockbridge, Grass Lake, Sandstone, Aurelia, Sonondaga, Bunker Hill, Springport, Parma, Dansville, Eden, Rives Junction, Fitchburg, Tompkins, and Munith. The Red Cedar also not playing well. Doppler radar indicated the storm totals anywhere from 3 to 5 inches across the warning areas. The heavy amounts fell from Richland to Gull Lake and Bedford. And this is for warnings in Eaton, Barry, Northern Kalamazoo, Northern Calhoun, Allegan, and Van Buren counties. Whole host of counties with a mess today, I did. Numerous roads likely water-covered and dangerous. I saw water in all sorts of fields and so forth on my drive today. Other locations that could be affected include Kalamazoo, Battle Creek, Charlotte, Albion, Marshall, Allegan, South Haven, Plainwell, Eastwood, Westwood, Springfield, Otsego, Galesburg, Bangor, Brownlee Park, Level Park, Oak Park. So just trying to keep you up to date. Just a big mess out there all over the place. And looking at the forecast going forward, seems we could see some rain again by Thursday in big parts of the state. So we'll hope not to repeat what we just went through. We'll hope not to repeat what we have gone through here in the last 24 hours, because that would create a huge mess, and we'd prefer not to have that, but there you go. The National Weather Service reporting that at least 3 inches of rain fell from an area north of Kalamazoo and Battle Creek through Ann Arbor. Like I said, flood warnings in effect. Lansing and Jackson picked up at least 2 inches of rain, in some areas more. Some of the hardest hit areas will be the Red Cedar River, above Williamston, it says. And rivers near Ionia, Hastings, and elsewhere also expected to crest flood stage. So there you go. A lot to read and a lot to figure out and a lot going on. So I guess use common sense. I'll just ask you to do that. Use common sense, and we'll go from there. Now, where I'd like to start our discussion today is with the President, Barack Obama, and his discussion of race in America today. I'd like to start with his discussion of race in America today. The president, appearing on a radio program yesterday, basically said that racism, if you're white anyhow, for sure, was the indication. Racism, what's in our DNA? It's nothing we can do about it. We're born, in effect, is what my takeaway was. But I would like you to hear this, and it is harsh language. The president does not mince words. So I'd like you to hear this, and I'd like your response. The hotline number is 888-900-9966. 888-900-9966 is the hotline here. I'd like you on board with the conversation. Alex, go ahead and roll that.
Racism, we are not cured of.
Clearly.
And it's not just a matter of it not being polite to say nigger in public. That's not the measure of whether racism still exists or not. It's not just a matter of overt discrimination. We have societies don't overnight completely erase everything that happened 200 to 300 years prior.
I mean, that pretty much covers it, doesn't it? We are not cured. You know, it seems pretty harsh. Pretty harsh, and he throws it out there. The use of the N-word there is it's pretty potent. But I wonder if it's over the line, because I would never use that word. I wouldn't use that word in conversation, generally speaking. On occasion, it gets used, and in this case, it is in context. However, can you imagine if a... See, here's the double standard that I don't like. If I did use the word, and I was sitting here discussing something and explaining a point of view in context, I might lose my job if I drop that word here on the air. It's not illegal to use. It's not prohibited by the FCC. But yet I might lose my job based on that. Now, the question is what he said true? Racism, we're not cured of. And it's not just a matter of it not being polite to say the N-word in public. That's not the measure of whether racism still exists or not. It's not just a matter of overt discrimination. Societies don't overnight completely erase everything that happened 200 to 300 years prior. There is no doubt that the state of race relations in America has improved dramatically. There is no doubt that race relations, the way minorities have melded into society, there's no question that all these things have improved over my lifetime and probably yours. There's no other way around it. America is not the same place it was in 1965. The argument now is over the Confederate flag flying on the grounds of the South Carolina state capitol, which, by the way, it won't be there much longer because Governor Nikki Haley says it's time for it to go. It's not the same world, and to say otherwise is ludicrous. Now, some seem compelled, genetically compelled, to hang on to this victimhood notion. Some seem compelled to think that I should owe reparations, that white Americans should pay black Americans reparations. I am sorry, but that is ludicrous. 7 generations ago, or 8, slavery ended in America. We're going to pick up this part of the conversation on the other side of the break, but something for you to think about. It's 14 after the hour on the Steve Gruber Show. Let's talk about race, shall we? Have some courage. It's the Steve Gruber Show.
The Steve Gruber Show. Jump starting your day with the news that matters.
Sitting on the park bench, eyeing little girls with bad intentions.
Let's go over some things and understand some things factually speaking. Let's talk about race. Let's have some courage. 888-900-9966. You can do it. If I can do it, you can do it. This part of the program brought to you by AmericanMetalRoofs.com. AmericanMetalRoofs.com. Enter our giveaway for a new metal roof for your home at AmericanMetalRoofs.com. You know, America gets this, the left has saddled us with this rewrite of history that somehow, you know, America is the great evil nation on the planet when it comes to slavery. And it's not hardly the truth at all. In fact, America had nothing to do with slavery. We inherited it. We as a nation inherited slavery from the British and the French and those that came before us on this continent. And in less than 3 generations, we eradicated it from the continent. Pretty simple. 85 years later, we took on slavery and eliminated it from the American landscape. Now, was it immediately solved? All the problems? No, it took another 100 years for Martin Luther King to walk with his followers to advance civil rights further. But the fact of the matter is, look around the world. You would think by watching news coverage that somehow America's the only racist country. In fact, is that way off from the truth? Race relations in America compared to other places on the planet in a far better position. So let's talk about the positive thing. And before we leave the idea of, you know, America inheriting slavery as an institution from previous governments, the Western Hemisphere alone, Brazil had six times as many slaves as America. Six times. And then you go to Iraq and Iran. They had more slaves than the entire Western Hemisphere combined. So let's talk truth when it gets to this notion of reparations. It's a foolish notion. First of all, for me, probably much like other people, half of my family didn't even arrive in America till 50 years after the end of the Civil War. Then another part of my family fought for the North, fighting to free the slaves in the Civil War. And you expect that it's appropriate for me to pay reparations based solely on skin color. Talk about racism. You know, this whole white privilege notion. I was privileged enough to be born and to work hard and to go to work every day and do my best. Wasn't something I asked for, obviously. It's something that I have embraced. Being an American is the greatest honor of my life. Being born here, I used to ask myself as a kid and wonder to myself, how did I get so lucky? Back in those days, you, of course, had the Cold War going. And I would seriously, you know, wonder, why was I so lucky to be born in America and not Russia or somewhere else? I mean, how fortunate for the opportunities. How fortunate to be on the right team. We're still on the right team, but somehow there's a lot of infighting on the team. Oh, we're not great. We're not great. Yeah, we are great. We, in fact, are great. And if we'd stop telling ourselves otherwise, we could be great again and greater than we've ever been. I'm sick of listening to people like Bernie Sanders run us down every day. I'm sick of two-faced politicians like Hillary Clinton attacking America every day. And Barack Obama, well, using the N-word, I wouldn't, you know, in fact, I don't know that we'll run it again or not. I wouldn't say the word. I wouldn't use the word. And it does speak volumes because I don't think most people would. This creep that killed the 9 Bible study members in Charleston, the 9 black Bible study members in Charleston, he represents an infinitesimally small minority of this country, maybe 1/1,000th of 1%. So small, it's ridiculous. And yet, in their effort to score political points, the left will somehow try to indicate, well, that's what Republicans think. No. No, it's not. Well, that's the way conservatives are. No. I can assure you, no, it's not. I can assure you that you are wrong. Because in America, there's one thing that conservatives do respect. It's hard work. We respect that a lot. Hard work, education, looking after your family, these are things we respect. And I don't frankly care what your persuasion is, generally speaking. If you get up every day and go to work, take care of your place, pay your taxes, then I fully support you, 100% support you. So don't give us that nonsense that we're racist because by DNA. You know, I want you to hear this piece again from Barack Obama, but I am going to go ahead and have Alex beep that out. I don't need to hear the N-word. We've all heard it, you know, enough here and there. We know what it is. But I want you to hear it one more time. Go. You got it?
Racism. There. We are not cured of.
Clearly.
And it's not just a matter of it not being polite to say nigger in public. That's not the measure of whether racism still exists or not. It's not just a matter of overt discrimination. We have to, societies don't overnight completely erase everything that happened 200 to 300 years prior.
No, they don't. But we have made tremendous strides just in my lifetime. And for the culture and the industry of victimhood to concern themselves otherwise is nonsensical. It makes no sense whatsoever. I've never seen a place that says whites only. I've never seen bathrooms that say whites and coloreds ever. Not in my lifetime. Not anywhere. Not in my lifetime. So I just make it clear to you that we have made great strides. And I don't know how I feel about the president using the N-word, except that I know that I wouldn't use it. And also, almost me, it feels like we're being baited into something. 25 after the hour. What are your thoughts? 888-900-9966. I believe in America. I guarantee you that. 25 after on the Steve Gruber Show.
Michigan's radio program of record is the Steve Gruber Show. Here is Steve Gruber.
Free after on this Tuesday, the Steve Gruber Show. Look forward to your phone calls. 888-900-9966. 888-900-9966. You know, in the wake of what happened in Charleston, excuse me. Of course, there's a lot of calls on the left for the elimination of gun rights. They might say they're looking for common sense gun laws, and they use a lot of euphemisms. But the fact of the matter is, They want your guns. They want all of your guns. And at some point, that's their desire, their dream, their hope, is to disarm all civilians, not only in America, but around the world. That's what gun grabbers do. It's what they do. It's what their aim is. Make no mistake. They'll try to incrementally get your guns. And in the end, they want them all because they think that they'll sell it to you on the notion of safety, and it's for the children and so forth. Well, if it was so safe, then gun-free zones would be the place to be. But obviously, that is proven otherwise. Our next guest, Dr. John Lott, is the professor when it comes to the facts about guns. He's done more research and has a better understanding than anyone else. Dr. Lott, welcome back to the program.
Great to talk to you again, Steve.
Hey, so let me ask you something. I just want to clarify something here. Are you a stooge for the gun lobby?
not that I know of.
Well, I say that because an article we're going to get to here in a couple of minutes basically says that anybody that says that guns save lives and defensive gun maneuvers and so forth is just because people are, you know, puppets of the gun lobby and stooges of the gun lobby, that sort of thing. I just want to make sure we're clear that you are an academic. You are a non-gun owner. When you started your research into firearms, you had some preconceived notions about guns. Most, if not all of which, you have since disproved because you decided to follow the facts and to see where they would go. Is that a fair way to put your background in a thumbnail?
Right. No, my views have changed a lot over time. I was probably pretty much in the middle of the debate, influenced by a lot of the media, even though I'd done a lot of research on crime, even though I'd worked in the federal government dealing with criminal justice issues. I hadn't really thought heavily about the issue of gun ownership and its impact on crime. You know, I'm sure I was as influenced as anybody else by the typical media coverage.
Sure. So, okay. So, I mean, the media feeds people a steady diet of guns are bad and gun-free zones will save lives and this sort of thing. And yet, anybody who bothers to open their eyes and look can see that the slaughter, the wanton slaughter of innocent people happens in gun-free zones at an all-too-regular rate. The most recent, of course, being this horrible event a week ago in Charleston, South Carolina, where this twisted individual went into a Bible study and opened fire. Again, that was a gun-free zone. I mean, the gun-free zone just seems to attract the worst of the worst when it comes to this sort of thing.
Well, I mean, I understand the desire to, the people think that if they simply ban guns from certain areas, it will make those areas safer. The problem is, who obeys those laws? Obviously, law-abiding good citizens, permit holders, people who care about the laws obey that. But the very fact that they're obeying these laws makes it more attractive for others to attack them in those places. And I think the simplest way to get this point across is, would you put a sign in front of your home that said your home was a gun-free zone? If you really felt that there was a chance that a criminal was thinking about attacking or stalking you or your family, would you put a sign up like that? And I debate people all the time, but none of the even strong proponents of gun control would admit to putting up a sign like that in front of their home.
No question about that. You know, and I want to, I'm going to guess you're pretty good at this, but I heard people just in the last few days say the problem is these mass shootings. I mean, they just happen all the time. It never used to be like this. We have more mass shootings than we've ever had. And I know that from reading your materials that mass shootings, as defined by the FBI, and not redefined recently, but as defined by the FBI, is four victims or more in a 24-hour period, is considered a mass shooting. And, of course, we have things like Aurora and Columbine and Newtown come to mind. These are obviously mass shootings. Are there more or less of these, say, than there were 10, 20, 30 years ago? Because from reading your books and your studies and your stats and so forth, it seems that these mass killings are less frequent but more highly publicized. At least that's my take.
Right. Well, I mean, you can measure these things or define them in different ways. If you look at four or more people that are killed in a public place, kind of excluding gang fights or killings that result from other crimes, so you're looking at the types of cases that you just listed where people are trying to kill others simply for the fact of killing them. That's actually been fairly constant over time, whether you define it as four or more or two or more cases. There's really not been, I mean, maybe for four or more, there's actually been a small drop, but it's not been statistically significant. So I'd say things have pretty much been flat. Now, where they occur, those types of things have changed over time. But,
well, now, hold on. What you just said is mathematically important. Statistically, then, those that involve four victims or more have remained statistically flat for what period of time?
Since the late 70s.
Okay, this is important because since the late 70s, the population of the United States has dramatically increased, and the number of guns in circulation has gone up exponentially in that time. So
right.
That's kind of key.
Well, when I talk about it as a per capita rate. So I'm kind of adjusting for the change in the population.
Fair enough. So, but it remains flat. All right. So you've adjusted for the increases of population. But what about the increases? We know that gun ownership, certainly since Barack Obama has taken office, the number of guns in circulation has gone up pretty significantly in some areas. And yet we don't see an outbreak. We don't see the Wild West out there.
No. I mean, the permit holders are incredibly law-abiding. They lose their permits for any type of firearms-related violation at you know, thousands or tens of thousands of one percentage point. It's hard to find any other group in the population that's as law-abiding as those individuals are. You know, they're not the ones that one should be concerned about. The problem is that when you leave people defenseless, that's where you actually go and create a magnet for those who want to go and do harm. And, you know, just take the Charleston case from last week. This killer, apparently, his primary target was originally going to be the College of Charleston. But he made a comment to a friend that he wasn't going to do that because there was too much security there, too many armed campus police officers there that could stop him. You know, you look at the James Holmes case, the killer at the Batman movie theater in Aurora, Colorado. Just a couple weeks ago, his diary was released, and it was clear that he had been originally thinking about attacking an airport, but then decided to go after a movie theater because at the airports he noticed that there were too many armed people with guns.
Easy target the movie theater, yeah.
And the movie theater that he ended up picking was the one movie theater out of the seven showing the premiere of the movie within a 20-minute drive of his apartment, the only one that posted signs banning permanent concealed handguns.
Okay, hold it right there, Doctor. Dr. John Lott on the Steve Gruber Show. We'll be right back.
This is the Steve Gruber Show, bringing you the news and newsmakers that affect you most.
Someday they won't let you, now you must agree. The times they are a-telling, and the changing isn't free.
45 after on this Tuesday, our guest this hour, Dr. John Lott. Dr. John Lott is here with us, the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. You can find out more about the truth about guns and statistics and so forth, and don't just fall into the talking points. Doctor, before we get back into part of this, though, I mean, I'm sitting here looking at articles from USA Today, basically saying, you know, that guns cost us $175 billion in 2010, and the numbers are staggering, and that gun violence for the first time ever will surpass automobile accidents in America for the number of people killed. Of course, the majority of those are suicides. But then there's the Violence Policy Center that tries to destroy, pick apart anything you have to say statistically. And I wonder, my point being is, people that are fed a steady diet of this, people like yourself, prior to you actually, you know, doing some research, just tend to believe it. And therefore, I wonder if at some point the scales tip back against gun ownership in America.
Oh, I mean, there's surely a lot of money being put in on the other side. I mean, the best I can try to do is explain to people how the data is put together, provide links to the raw data on our website at crimeresearch.org, and get, you know, a way for other academics to be involved in the debate, people who know the data and can point to where the correct sources are. So you mentioned Violence Policy Center. They just came out with a report that got a lot of attention, which claimed that there were almost no defensive gun uses relative to crimes committed with guns. And what they compared was cases of justifiable homicide, where people have killed a criminal, versus the number of murders that are committed with guns. And there's so many problems with it. I don't even know where to start, but I'll just mention, first of all, it ignores the fact that fewer than 1% of the times that people use guns defensively is the criminal killed or wounded. And so that ignores the fact that all these other cases where simply brandishing a gun, letting a criminal know that you have a gun, which causes them to run away and not commit their crime, aren't counted as a benefit at all. But yet, for those 99-plus percent of the cases, I would assume the person who scared off the criminal and stopped them from committing any crime would view that as a benefit. And plus, the very notion of these justifiable homicides. People may have been listening to the news to know the problems with justifiable homicide numbers for police. Well, the numbers for civilians are even more poorly taken care of. I, on our website, actually have some discussions from Michigan. There was a news study that was done a few years ago by Michigan Live there, where they went through the raw data and found that very few police departments in Michigan reported justifiable homicides, and those that did never went back and updated the data once they found out that it was a justifiable homicide. So somebody would be killed, they were listed as a murder, and then when an investigation was done and found it was justifiable, you know, the police departments had other things to worry about rather than going back and correcting the earlier data that they had collected.
And they know, of course, MLive that you're referring to is a, I mean, they're a wildly left-of-center news organization based out of Ann Arbor. And, I use some of their articles here from time to time, but the truth of the matter is, they're no fans of guns either. I mean, editorially or principally.
Well, I'm just saying they seem to do a reasonable job on this particular study. And, you know, it indicates something that maybe a lot of gun control advocates would be surprised by. But those justifiable homicide numbers are not to be used in the way that they're being used.
I guess my question is this. Do you think that Hillary Clinton, of course, now coming out and saying it's time for common sense gun laws, but of the more than 20 executive actions put forth by the president following Sandy Hook. Was there anything on that list that would have prevented what happened in Charleston last week? Anything at all?
No, I don't really know anybody who's arguing that it would. Look, first of all, this killer here already could pass a background check, but he stole the gun from his mom that was there. It's not clear how you would have stopped him from doing it. Plus, the thing that's so common in so many of these attacks is how long they plan them. I mean, this killer last week had been planning his attack for over 6 months. That's, and many of these mass public shootings, a year, 2 years are common. In Newtown, it was over 2 years that they were planning. When somebody is planning an attack that long in advance, it's just very difficult to stop them from getting access to a weapon. You know, if you really think somebody's in danger, you ought to consider, we ought to talk about locking them up, but just simply going and trying to say you can't go and buy a weapon isn't going to stop them from doing harm.
Yeah, it's so here we are heading into the 2016 election cycle, and so I guess I'll leave you with this. One comment on this. Hillary Clinton's going to make it, obviously, a cornerstone, it sounds like, of her campaign going forward. The president's going to use whatever political capital he has left in an effort to go after guns and ammunition. That seems to be a drive for the last few months here of his administration. The question is, with so many people supporting guns now, more than any in my lifetime, will it go anywhere? 20 seconds, my friend, for the last word.
Well, I guess I'm concerned that it will. There's a lot of resources being put into pushing this. I mean, Bloomberg alone is putting in $50 million a year. He pays for studies, and they get huge amounts of news coverage. It's going to be a real battle. And, you know, you have federal government money, you have other money going into this. It's, you know, and the thing is, whoever wins the election this next time is going to determine who's going to control the courts, who's going to control the Supreme Court, and that's going to have a major impact on whether people are going to be able to own guns or not.
Fair point. Dr. John Lott, always a pleasure. Your website again, sir?
CrimeResearch.org.
There you have it, everybody. CrimeResearch.org. John Lott, the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. Sir, we'll talk soon.
Thanks.
Tuesday on the Steve Gerber Show. We'll be right back.